Welcome back to the Voices of Biotech podcast. I'm Millie Nelson, editor of Bioprocess Insider, and this week I'm joined by Remy Martin from Exmoor Pharma. As you're already aware, this series is focusing on all things to do with sustainability in the life sciences space. This is a really interesting episode where we discuss the build-out of a sustainable facility and the steps taken by Exmoor to do this, as well as how sustainability actually equals efficiency. We really hope you enjoy listening, and please keep an eye out for next month's episode.
So I'm Remy Martin. I'm the commercial manager at Exmoor Pharma. I've been with Exmoor about 6 years. My role really spans business development and commercial engagement. Really, it's about understanding the scope and the requirement of our customers and how that translates into a piece of work that Exmoor can support. And Exmoor really has a focus on helping our clients accelerate their journey, really, from research and academia or early spin-out right through to commercialization of cell and gene therapies.
Great, thank you. Obviously, as you know, this podcast is all about sustainability, this series. Mm-hmm. So would you be able to provide us an overview of some of the sustainability strategies that you have at Exmoor Pharma?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it might help to give a little background to Exmoor as an organization, and then I can talk about how sustainability kind of weaves into that. Currently, Exmoor are a cell and gene therapy CDMO. We view ourselves as a CDMO with a difference. So we're built on 20 years of experience through our consultancy team. So within our ranks, we have consultants who've been with us since day one, advising on facility and process design. So helping clients to design manufacturing facilities in the cell and gene therapy space, and to help our clients to design, you know, effective, efficient manufacturing processes and the strategies to get to that. So advising on PD and manufacturing and CMC. And we've since expanded the company to have process development labs and GMP manufacturing capabilities. And we designed and built our own facility, which we moved into in 2023. But we've designed over 45 manufacturing facilities in the advanced therapy space in the past 20 years. So we feel like we've got a good understanding of kind of what goes into making sustainable facilities and running sustainable operations. When you're talking about kind of sustainability strategies and initiatives at Exmoor, if you look at the kind of high level, we really strived to design and construct a facility that was as sustainable as we could make it for ourselves, which we moved into in 2023. And there's a lot of things I can talk about on facility design and construction, and we can maybe come onto that later. But looking at maybe some of the initiatives that we have at Exmoor, so we are aware of kind of all of the overarching longer term net zero obligations placed upon any company, and we're fully committed to achieving those. But at the kind of operational level, we have a really active green team, which is a kind of an employee initiative that support creation, rollout and implementation of initiatives to help our organization support sustainability. They've implemented a lot of things within the business. If you look at manufacturing, or if you look at kind of R&D in life sciences in general, single-use plastic is a big issue, yet in daily life it's being phased out. So we have our green team who've implemented processes to decontaminate and recycle as much single-use plastic as possible from our PD labs. They've ensured that we're using waste contractors that offer maximum recycling capabilities to properly dispose of and recycle waste that we're generating. And also we review and utilize where we can sustainable consumable alternatives. There are a number of companies that are producing recycled plastic consumables and plant-based plastic consumables. So they're pushing hard to evaluate and bring those in where possible, obviously without compromising any of the quality of the work that we do. And as an organization within the lab, the broader organization, the green team are moving towards getting a My Green Lab certification, which is the sort of worldwide standard for lab sustainability best practices. And then as an organization, we're moving towards understanding what we would fully need to change to be able to achieve B Corp status, which is something that I think is very important to a number of people within the organization.
That's great. Thank you. And obviously, you mentioned there Exmoor's become a CDMO. It was in 2023 that you became a CDMO.
Yeah, that was when we moved into our facility, which has manufacturing capabilities. So we have four clean rooms in our new facility. So three processing clean rooms and one fill finish clean room. And prior to 2023, we established process development operations in 2016. So we had some development labs where we could support our clients with essentially creating, developing and optimizing manufacturing processes, which they could then manufacture themselves. So we've got a lot of experience in designing processes and facilities. But as of last year, we have our own manufacturing capabilities, which we're able to offer to clients to produce cell and gene therapies for clinical trials.
I've spoken, I think, on this sustainability series to a couple of CDMOs now. Would you say, or would you agree, that this aspect of sustainability, making sure that you have more sustainable method and also as sustainable as you can manufacturing facilities, that's an attractive thing to potential customers and your current customers, because they will partner with you and know that they've got that in place, or there's the initiatives that are going on there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, manufacturing a therapy product or manufacturing a, you know, any pharmaceutical or biologic is obviously energy intensive because of the requirements of, you know, of a clean room environment that they need to be manufactured in. So any initiative or anything that a manufacturing partner can do to help make that manufacturing process more sustainable, more carbon efficient, less expensive is highly desirable. You know, and sustainability, whilst, you know, it is an attractive proposition to many people, because it aligns with their kind of ESG governance and documentation, you know, sustainability often just means efficiencies, and that often can mean that, you know, you can do things far more cost effectively. It's not just a kind of a statement to say, you know, we act sustainably. It can often mean that you can do things more efficiently and therefore at a lower price point as well. So there's a definite cost consideration to be made when you're looking hard at how you do things sustainably.
I think that's a really important point, that sustainability equals efficiency. I think that often, yeah. And maybe I'm speaking more broadly, not necessarily just looking at the life sciences sector, but there seems to be this outlook that being sustainable is more costly sometimes, or more effort, maybe not necessarily monetary value, but there's a lot more that has to go into it, and therefore it's more labour intensive or something like that. And so I think it's interesting that actually there's things that can happen that make it more cost effective and therefore drives the price down, which is a major pain point in manufacturing across the life science industry.
No, I'd agree with that entirely. I think when you're establishing a new manufacturing facility, or maybe you're looking to kind of redevelop one, there are things that you can do during that sort of construction or development phase that have a longer term payoff to your organization and your clients. So things like solar panels on the roof. Lots of houses have them nowadays. It makes sense for businesses to have them, which then reduces the reliance on grid electricity and offsets a lot of the electrical utilization of a manufacturing facility. We had a particular challenge with our facility in that when we were constructing it, we have no gas or fuel oil for producing hot water on the site. So we switched to using heat pumps to provide that. The unintended benefit is they're about 2.5 times lower in terms of CO2 emissions than a gas boiler. So they are more efficient for us to use, despite us initially thinking that there was a problem. So we're quite happy with that solution that we arrived at.
If we go back then to the sustainable facility and the sustainable manufacturing practices that you've implemented at the new cell and gene facility that opened last year, it would just be great to give an overview, and I completely understand you're not in construction, but if you could discuss the process and maybe highlight some of the differences from creating a more sustainable manufacturing facility towards, let's say, a more traditional manufacturing facility.
You can really break it down into sort of the two areas of consideration. One is just your general building construction considerations. If you are building a building from scratch, obviously you want to do it in the most efficient and effective way possible. And then once your kind of shell of the building is constructed, it's then the facility design consideration. So how do you set up your clean rooms and your facility within the actual building itself? So, you know, when we looked at the space that we were going to site our new building, there was actually an existing old industrial building on site. So we were able to utilize the material on site, recycled about 99% of the waste material that was either sent back. So the steels, for example, were sent back for melting down that became part of the deals for our new facility. All of the concrete on site that was there from the previous building was crushed and used for the groundworks for the new building. Typically, lots of companies will do this, but it was very critical to us that the construction company that was building our building, we needed to ensure that the shell and core of the building were designed to a BREEAM excellent rating. So the environmental assessment methodology that's done on new construction, we really wanted it to be excellent. And that the building, when it was completed, would achieve an A rating from energy on their energy performance certificate. So it was kind of critical from the outset that we used a construction company that would enable us to achieve that. And then things like siting solar panels on the roof. If you know that you want those, getting them in and put into the construction as part of that initial construction phase is really critical. When we talk more about the facility design, and this is perhaps where the biggest savings are to be made from a sustainability perspective in terms of energy consumption. If you look at any manufacturing facility, the largest single source of carbon emissions and energy consumption will be in the HVAC system, so the heating, ventilation and air conditioning. You can minimize that, but essentially the main way in which you would look to minimize that is actually not just looking at the facility, it's looking at the process that you will be manufacturing. So you really need to think critically about the process design. So if we look at a clean room, different grades of clean room, higher grades of clean room will typically be more costly because there is an increased requirement for, you know, lower particle counts. You know, the cleanliness must be absolutely maintained. The air changeover rates are very high. If you can reduce the clean room grade requirement of your manufacturing process, you will result in lower HVAC costs. So the facility that we've designed is all of the manufacturing suites are grade C. Often in other manufacturing facilities for advanced therapies, you may see grade B or grade A. How do you go about achieving that? You really need to look at how can you close a manufacturing process. So whilst building a facility is one thing, you almost need to be thinking about how you can close your manufacturing process from the day that you start developing it. One of the first things that we often try and work with on our development clients is how do you take a process which may be completely open, may have open steps, and how do you close that process? So put it into reactors, tubing that can be welded, flasks that are sealed or closed, ensuring that as far as possible, that manufacturing process is closed from the outside environment. Not only does it mean that you can then operate it in kind of lower grade clean room requirements, but it means that the process is generally more robust. And often if you're looking at closed processing solutions like a stirred tank bioreactor or a fixed bed bioreactor or similar, they're often scalable solutions as well. Very easy to scale, which is helpful as you're moving through different clinical phases towards commercial. So you've got the sort of process design. Then the other thing that I think is critical is occupancy. You have to keep a clean room running really 24/7 to maintain the required kind of grade of cleanliness in that room. Any time that facility is not being used is costing money and obviously emitting carbon as a result of it. So if you can make the rooms as flexible as possible to ensure that they can be used for any or all manufacturing processes that you may require in that facility, that's something that you can do to maintain efficiencies and reduce the carbon output from that clean room. So when we designed the facilities at Exmoor, we designed grade C rooms as small as we realistically could make them, but also considering about 7 or 8 different manufacturing processes that could fit into those rooms at any one time as needed to make sure that they could be in use as often as possible. We didn't want to have rooms dedicated to one specific type of manufacturing process if it meant that it would lie empty for a length of time.
Thank you. That's really helpful because it encapsulates the fact that building a sustainable facility doesn't necessarily just happen from laying, you know, breaking ground.
Yeah.
It seems that it's obviously a lot more complex and longer process and thinking about what it is that you're going to be manufacturing, how you're going to be manufacturing it. And you have to have all of those pieces in place and then commence construction. So yeah, that was really interesting to hear some of the thinking points that you had to come up with to then facilitate the design of this facility. You mentioned there about how you had to really think about the design and then go on with the building and not wanting to, I guess, in essence, you know, burn cash if it wasn't going to be used. I'm just wondering from a staff perspective of the people who work in that facility now, is mm-hmm. there anything that differs from their day-to-day if they were to be in a more traditional facility, or are things operating the same way just with slightly different functions?
I think operationally there's little difference, you know, between a sustainable facility and a traditional facility. You still have to meet the kind of the same regulations regulatory requirements when it comes to manufacturing in terms of operation, whether it's been designed with sustainability in mind or not. I mean, some of the differences that you may see in the facility, for example, if you came to our facility, there'd be a screen telling you the performance of the solar panels on the roof. We may have some more bins in some of our development labs and some of our common areas to take away some of the different waste streams for appropriate recycling. But in typical operation, there'll be no difference in quality and virtually no difference in operation, whether a facility is sustainable or, you know, not been designed with sustainability in mind, other than hopefully the fact that a sustainable facility should be more cost effective to operate.
I know you touched upon there the fact that there's certain aspects you have to think of when you're designing a facility, but how much do you think they differ in terms of modality when you're thinking, obviously, you've built a more sustainable cell and gene therapy facility? Mm-hmm. How much do you think there's a lot of difference if I was to say you're building a different modality, a different facility for that? Would you have different considerations then to build into that process?
I'm going to give you a really unhelpful answer here. I'd say it depends.
That's not unhelpful.
I mentioned earlier, like, you know, reducing consumption by HVAC is one of the key considerations to kind of reducing the carbon footprint of the facility, making it more efficient. In a larger facility, you may be producing one product in there, and you may only require one air handling unit to run a couple of clean rooms. In a facility that is a kind of multi-purpose or multi-product facility, like you might find in a cell and gene therapy CDMO, you do need to have typically dedicated air handling units for each room to prevent cross-contamination. So you don't want any of the air that's going into any of the manufacturing rooms to have any opportunity to cross over. You will have undoubtedly a small amount of energy increase because you have to have segregated air handling for each of the rooms in a multi-product facility. But you can really look to mitigate that through process design and room design, so creating the smallest footprint possible. One of the things that I think we're going to see big changes, and I don't quite know when, but with the whole sort of the march to an industry 4.0, so looking towards automation, this seems to have really quite unique applicability to things like autologous cell therapy, where you have to have a high throughput of patient manufacturing processes when it is a one product, one patient treatment. The shift to automation, you know, we've seen a number of companies demonstrate or show technologies that show you essentially having small robotic clean rooms with a robot operating multiple manufacturing processes in different pods or in, you know, banks of reactors. Then you're really in a space where you can absolutely start to minimize the space requirements and look at making the smallest facilities possible. But when you're looking at cell and gene therapy, and particularly cell and gene therapy CDMO, unless you wish to specialize in a specific type of therapy, generally have to build a little more flexibility into your facility operational capabilities. And sometimes that does come at the cost of having to, you know, have some additional air handling units or HVAC to manage that.
I'm assuming also, just from a business perspective, like you said, if you want to maintain some form of flexibility, because once you've built a facility that, say, that's just dedicated to one specific product, mm-hmm. you have pigeonholed yourself to a specific set of customers. If you then can't obviously provide the services to say, we can manufacture that for you, or we can do part of that process for you.
Yeah.
So it makes sense to also have flexibility to then be able to widen the customer pool.
Yeah, it's certainly something that's really important to us at Exmoor. So we've been going for 20 years. We've seen so many different manufacturing processes. We wanted our manufacturing clean rooms to be as process agnostic as we could make them. Now, that in some sense conflicts with what I was saying earlier around you need to know the process that is going to go into a clean room, but we tried to balance both of those requirements. You know, we know what processes we're 2024 likely to have running in our clean rooms. We've picked a number of gene therapy processes, a number of autologous and allogeneic cell therapies, and a couple of other modalities, and mapped them out in our clean rooms. But we tried to keep an open mind when we're designing the clean rooms, so that if something changes in future, if there's a new modality that's discovered, or, you know, a new therapy type or manufacturing process, that within reason we should be able to accommodate it in our clean rooms. We wanted to keep them as flexible as possible, just because we've seen the evolution of the industry over the past 20 years. We know how fast things can change, you know, trends can change, manufacturing requirements can change, that we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves. We want to try and keep our offering as flexible and responsive as we can. And that comes right down to the design of our facility and the design of our clean rooms.
Definitely. I mean, there's always
trends and you can speak to people and there's what's going to be the next big thing. And then all of a sudden something else becomes the next big thing, or something that was the big thing that then fades a little bit and something else comes up. So it makes complete sense. I just would like to ask, what time did it take for to build that facility for it to become fully operational? And is there any difference actually in the time to build a more sustainable facility compared to a more traditional facility?
Very good question. So I think it was a little over a year, about 14 months from breaking ground to kind of moving into the facility. But a lot of the work that I think goes into designing a sustainable facility happens before that. So it's all around the design phase, particularly in our instance, around the design of the clean rooms. So we spent a lot of time working out how many clean rooms we would need, what size they would need to be based on the processes that we would have, and then looking at, you know, what are the absolute optimal adjacencies. You know, how do you fit all of the rooms together in such an order or in such an arrangement that you minimize the total footprint that you need without compromising, you know, the quality of the process that will take place within those clean rooms. So we spent a lot of time optimizing the layout of our clean rooms to ensure that the footprint was as small as it could be without having to jeopardize the flows of people and material and product and waste through the facility.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. I think we spoke a little bit earlier about some of the staff members who work at that facility. I did read somewhere that at that facility, you've got electric charging points for cars, e-bikes. And I think that's really interesting because obviously I know we have focused a lot on the sustainable facility itself. It's such a huge thing, the staff who are in that facility, how they're operating and what sustainability initiatives, or I guess in a way perks, do they have that are actually at the workplace to continue that on outside of the actual facility work itself.
Yeah, so, you know, skilled people are the absolute, you know, lifeblood of our organisation. You know, they are the people that provide the consultancy support, the development support, the manufacturing support. Without skilled people, no company is anything, really. So we really value the input from our team. We have, like I said, a green team, which is a employee-led initiative to help drive forward our sustainability. But when you build a manufacturing facility, some exceptions, but you rarely locate them in the centre of town. They're generally in kind of out of town areas with good logistical links, industrial areas, and they're large buildings. So we really considered how would staff travel to the site? How would they get here? How would they commute when they needed to come in to do some manufacturing work? So we obviously need a car park, but we fitted in electric vehicle charging for 20 cars. And that's available to all our employees to charge their personal cars. And quite helpfully, as of a couple of years ago, HMRC changed their rules to mean that if you charge your personal car at work, it's no longer a taxable benefit in kind. So it seemed a very reasonable thing that Exmoor would be able to offer to our employees, because it means that they can charge up their personal cars to work, reduces the cost of their commute, and hopefully overall reduces their carbon footprint. We have, obviously, like many companies, a cycle to work scheme. We are on a cycle route, so there's the opportunity for people to cycle to work. We put in protected bike parking and an e-bike charging for people that use electric bikes. And then we're in the process now of rolling out an EV car salary sacrifice scheme to enable our employees to benefit financially from tax-free initiatives like cycle to work and EV car schemes. I think it does kind of show the employees that there's perks and benefits like this, but it enables them, I think, to be quite directly engaged with some of the sustainability initiatives. It gives a more tangible outcome and benefit to the staff rather than just the sort of the warm fuzzy feeling of knowing that they're working at a place that values sustainability and aligns with the sustainability values that many of them have. You know, there are direct tangible benefits that they can get for a company that values sustainability.
Definitely. I think it's really important, and a few people across this podcast series have said about how important sustainability is really as a people thing rather than just a physical thing. It's great to see that it's pushed out across the company, not just in every day when you're at work, but all of these, like you said, you're reducing the people who work there's carbon footprint, and they're then contributing to sustainability in a more broad way. And I would assume that that's quite attractive as well for some people, because if they have sustainability as a core value, if you are then working for a company who are introducing initiatives, not just in the workplace. I know it's technically work related because you're cycling to work or you're driving to work, but it helps facilitate that change and more sustainable practices across life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something that we have seen also in recruitment as well. You know, when we've been building out our team over the past couple of years, we've had candidates in interviews who said, I've seen on your website, I've seen on LinkedIn that you have a, you know, green team, you undertake initiatives. That's something that I really want to be a part of. So it's obviously, it's resonating with people who are looking for roles within companies as well, that they really are looking for companies that align with their values and that they can actively be involved in sustainability initiatives.
That's great. And I mean, I know that you've obviously opened the facility last year, mm-hmm. and it's in Bristol in the UK. I'm correct in saying that, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Are there any plans? And I mean, I know you probably wouldn't be able to tell me if there was, but are there any plans to expand or to potentially move or open another facility somewhere else in the future?
There's always plans to grow. We don't have current plans to move into a new facility, but what I didn't mention earlier is that when we designed our facility, I said that we put all of our process development in there and we've got 4 clean rooms in there. We also have just over 1,000 square meters of fallow space within the building. So that is currently empty space within the building. But the long-term kind of opportunity that provides us is that as we grow, we can install further manufacturing clean rooms to be able to scale to meet our client demand. So we fitted out 4 clean rooms, but in theory, we have space for an additional 5 to 7 clean rooms, depending on the size that we want to build in there. So we're North Bristol near the M5, M4 interchange right now. We'll be here for a long time, as long as the facility will accommodate us. We also have an extra 600 square meters of a second floor where we can expand our process and analytical development capabilities. So again, when we designed the facility, we also had expansion in mind, as well as sustainability. So we should be able to stay in this location for a long time to come.
Yeah, and that fits in with the flexibility aspect as well. You have that flexibility to not, if you'd have picked a different site that didn't have that extra space, you would almost have no choice then but to find somewhere else and open somewhere new or to have to add and expand.
We've seen so much change in the industry that there will undoubtedly be manufacturing processes and therapies, you know, in 5 or 10 years' time that we know nothing about right now. So the flexibility that we have, we could build additional manufacturing clean rooms that could accommodate as yet unknown manufacturing processes. So we can move responsively with the industry as we need to.
I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, so feel free to tell me if you're not too sure. But just thinking about that, it's a space where, like you said, there's a lot of unknowns in the future, mm-hmm. and you're not quite sure exactly where it's going to go. There's no linear line or like crystal ball you can look into and say, yep, in 10 years, that will be completely validated concept. And that's probably what we'll move into. But thinking about that in terms of sustainability, is there anything in particular where you think 10 years time that will be something that's across most life sciences firms, or that's something that maybe narrow it down CDMOs will be doing in that space to make sure that they're not only just attractive to the customer but also being more sustainable in their own practices so that they're getting that cost efficient manufacturing down to a T?
I think we're probably going to see quite a significant amount of process intensification within the cell and gene therapy space. If you look at the kind of where we were with the monoclonal antibody space kind of 15 to 20 years ago and how far that came on, you know, in terms of the yield, the grams per liter that people were getting out of monoclonal antibody bioreactors, we're going to see, I imagine, similar yield improvements in the viral vector space. Going to see far more efficient processes, and I'm sure a number of CDMOs will be, along with clients, leading and driving on the development of far more efficient and intensive manufacturing processes. Personally, I'm interested to see at what point or if viral vector mediated gene therapies become overtaken by a suitable non-viral alternative, because I think that may, if we can synthesize something, if we can use a nucleic acid based method for genetic modification, may again allow for much more intensification of the process, you know, producing far more doses from a much smaller manufacturing footprint. We're not quite there yet, but I think we'll see a paradigm shift shift in kind of genetic therapies over the next 5 to 10 years.
Obviously, that will contribute to sustainability. But I think another thing that you've pointed out there is that notion of accessibility, cell and gene therapies, which, you know, is discussed a lot in the space. But there's all of these amazing concepts out there and there's some amazing, you know, approved drugs. But equally, there's that other side to cell and gene therapies where the price point is so high and there's a lot of inaccessibility that they're not being able to be used to the extent that they could, and they're therefore not having the impact to the patients that they could right now. So I think in 10 years that would be great if that happened.
Yeah, I think it'd be fantastic. I think, you know, even though we've come a long way in the past 15 or 20 years, I feel we're still very much in a nascent industry. I think we'll see huge efficiencies over the next 5 to 10 years, or increases in efficiencies that it will be unrecognizable in a few years time. And I think obviously in any drug developer sector, you've obviously got a huge number of programs which will fail in preclinical and clinical. So developers will always be, you know, needing to recoup all of the development costs that they have invested in failed product. But I think once we see products really hitting the market, which have huge potential patient populations for solid tumors or other kind of really high patient population numbers, I think that's the point at which we're going to have to start seeing cost of goods being driven down. And treatments that do treat these large patient populations, we simply can't keep delivering them at a cost of, you know, £1 to £2.5 million per dose. So I think there's going to have to be some real keen focus on understanding, assessing and driving down the cost of goods on some of these treatments that we're going to start seeing come to the market.
And it's important that you've raised the point that sustainability actually can play a part in lowering some of those costs. And I know that's not necessarily maybe by, you know, however much significantly, but it plays a part in lowering the costs if you can make it cheaper to manufacture, but at the same quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the one thing that you would never compromise on and can never compromise, because at the end of the day, we're making life-changing treatments for patients who are in, you know, an incredible need for these treatments. So you can never compromise on the product quality. But I think sustainability and incorporating sustainability into manufacturing is a key component, of which there are many components in driving down the cost of goods, you know, looking at efficiencies in manufacturing, looking at efficiencies in consumables, looking at efficiencies in logistics and in delivery. It's a hugely complex puzzle, of which, you know, building sustainable facilities and developing sustainable consumables and reagents is a core part of.
Well, it's been a really, really interesting conversation. I always like to open it up at the end, and if there is anything that you feel we haven't touched upon or something that you'd feels really important from Exmoor Pharma that you'd like to say, then please feel free to go ahead so you can speak about that.
I'd possibly like to turn it around, perhaps. You know, I'm happy to talk with you today about what we're doing in sustainability. I'm keen to hear from our clients and people in the industry about what they're doing in sustainability. Is there anything any approach or initiatives that we or other companies could benefit from implementing? And what would they like to see being adopted as a kind of industry standard?